Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Tuesday, the 13th of October 2009, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. And this is episode 11 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week, we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to get into an examination of one of the most popular alternative therapies out there, acupuncture. It's the one that works, right? Well, stick around and you'll find out. We'll also have a look at how well the media have gone, particularly the ABC, when they've reported on studies involving acupuncture. Maybe you shouldn't believe everything you hear. Then in our movie review section, we'll review two new movies, both with one-syllable titles, Che and Moon. So stay tuned for all that and more here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Okay, here's our LGBT news roundup for the last week or so. First, let's head to Washington, D.C., where right now it's just after 10 a.m. on Monday morning, and a lot of people will still be coming down from the excitement of the National Equality March held there on Sunday afternoon. Apparently, over 200,000 people marched through Washington, calling for full legal equality for LGBT people at the federal level and in all 50 states. Although I have seen different estimates of the crowd numbers. Some websites say it was as low as 20,000, some say 100,000, some say over 200,000. Anyway, it seems there were quite a lot of people there. The march passed by the White House and then ended up in front of the U.S. Capitol building, where the crowd listened to over 30 speakers, including David Mixner and Cleve Jones, the two main organizers of the event, the actress Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City, Reverend Troy Perry, the founder of the Metropolitan Community Church, Julian Bond, the chair of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, Judy Shepherd, the mother of Matthew Shepherd, who was brutally murdered in 1998, and even pop singer Lady Gaga, who didn't sing but gave a speech instead. Sunday's march was actually not the biggest march they've had. As we mentioned last week, this was actually the fifth LGBT rights march on Washington since the first one in 1979. Now, some of those earlier ones included celebrity performances and attracted over 500,000 people. So this year's was apparently a bit more low-key and grassroots and focused more on the serious issue of rights. The other thing that happened was on Saturday evening, the night before the march, President Barack Obama gave a speech at a black tie dinner organized by the Human Rights Campaign, which is the largest LGBT rights lobby group in the US. And this was only the second time that an incumbent president had addressed an LGBT rights dinner, the first being Bill Clinton back in 1997. And apparently the speech was generally well received. Obama covered all the main LGBT rights issues to be addressed at the federal level in the US, things like a hate crimes law, employment non-discrimination, HIV/AIDS funding, the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, and particularly the abolition of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that prohibits LGBT people from serving in the US military. The main criticism after the speech, though, was that although his message was spot on and he made a lot of promises, he set no deadlines and didn't mention when he plans to move on any of these issues. So quite a few commentators were left a little bit disappointed by that. My only comment on all this is that, well, as they are pretty much all of those reforms that he mentioned actually involve legislative changes, that means they're all really primarily issues to be dealt with by the Congress rather than the president. Anyway, needless to say, dear listener, when there are developments on any of these issues, we will keep you up to date here on Reality Check. Now, let's stay a little bit longer in Washington, D.C., because our next news item also comes from there as well, and that is a bill that was introduced into the D.C. City Council last week that would legalize same-sex marriage in the District of Columbia. It's expected to pass easily, as 10 of the 13 council members are co-sponsors of the bill, and the mayor is a supporter as well. It then can be vetoed by the US Federal Congress, which has special powers over laws passed in the district, but it's expected that Congress will let it through, and so it looks highly likely that Washington, D.C. will get same-sex marriage before the end of the year, making it the next jurisdiction in the US to get it. Actually, Washington, D.C. already started recognizing same-sex marriages performed in other jurisdictions back in July. They just can't perform them there. At least not yet. But hopefully, soon they will. And from Washington, D.C., let's move across the Atlantic and way down to Johannesburg in South Africa, which held its Gay Pride March there 2 weekends ago, actually, on Saturday, October the 3rd. Apparently, over 15,000 participants marched along a 3.5-kilometre route amongst lots of colourful floats and open-top buses. And Joburg Pride this year was actually celebrating its 20th anniversary. The first Pride March took place there back in 1990. And was actually the first Pride March in Africa. It is also now the biggest Pride March in the continent. Well, I guess they don't have that much competition because I can't imagine that there are too many Pride Marches in Africa. Maybe just in Johannesburg and Cape Town, I think. And if I recall correctly, I think there was one held in Namibia a few weeks ago. But, well, anyway, at least that's something in a part of the world that generally is not very tolerant of LGBT rights at all. All right, let's take a break now and listen to a song, and when we come back, we'll get into a critical analysis of acupuncture. Is it really such a good idea to let a complete stranger stick needles all over your body? Well, we'll find out, so stay tuned for that after this song here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Today is a wonderful day with Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman, and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was When You Were Young by The Killers. Now we move into the part of the show where we get into an analysis of a topic related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And today we're going to take a critical look at a form of alternative medicine that is popular the world over, acupuncture. Acupuncture generally has a considerably better reputation than a lot of other alternative medicines for being one that actually works. You'll often hear people say that they're a bit dubious about most alternative medicines, but they know that acupuncture is an effective treatment. It gets a lot of good press coverage and is almost always presented as being a useful therapy for a variety of conditions. So the conventional wisdom out there is that acupuncture works. But is that right? Well, on today's show, that's the question that we're going to try to answer. Okay, so let's approach this systematically. Whenever we want to examine any type of therapy, it's useful to do it in two steps. First of all, what's the theory behind this therapy? And how plausible is that theory in the light of everything we know about science, medicine, physics, chemistry, etc.? This is what you can call the question of prior plausibility. Then in the second step, you look at whether the remedy is actually effective or not. What do the clinical trials and other studies show? Even if a therapy sounds implausible, it still might be an effective treatment. This you find out from the studies. So let's deal with the first question first. What's the theory behind acupuncture and how plausible is it? Well, acupuncture is an ancient Chinese technique, some say over 2,000 years old. It is therefore pre-scientific and was formulated in an era when much less was known about the body and disease than we know now. The scientific revolution in medicine really began in the mid-19th century when the germ theory of disease began to gain ground and doctors came to realize that tiny microbes were responsible for most of the diseases ailing human beings. From about that time also, doctors began to apply the techniques of science to medicine. They began testing their hypotheses about the various causes of diseases and their treatments, and our medical knowledge suddenly increased exponentially. So, getting back to acupuncture, the theory of acupuncture is based on the concept of qi. Qi is a vital life energy that flows through all living creatures, including human beings. And according to the theory, disease occurs in the body when blockages occur in the flow of qi. Fortunately, though, these blockages can be removed by placing needles into the skin at various points in the body. The position for where to stick the needles is all important. The qi flows along what are called meridians, and there are 12 standard meridians and 8 extraordinary meridians in the human body. There are also, according to standard traditional acupuncture, almost 400 acupuncture points where you can stick the needles, depending on which disease is being treated and therefore which energy flows you need to unblock. So, talking of diseases, what can acupuncture be used to treat? Well, according to its practitioners, quite a lot. Surprisingly, a lot. It can be used for treating muscle pain, arthritis, constipation, diarrhea, urinary incontinence, weight loss, fertility problems, headache, earache, toothache, coughing, anorexia, etc., etc. Pretty amazing, isn't it? One treatment method for all these seemingly completely different ailments. So, is it plausible? Well, actually, no, because the whole theory of acupuncture is based on the concept of qi, and qi has never been shown to exist. No medical or other scientific device has ever been able to find this supposed flowing energy. And scientific understandings of biology and medicine and the human body don't point to anything like qi. Pretty much all known diseases and bodily functions can be explained without reference to qi. So given that qi has never been shown to exist, and nothing that we do know would indicate its existence, a skeptic would have to conclude that most likely qi doesn't exist. Now I know what the believers will say. They'll say that just because something hasn't been shown to exist doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Right? You can't say categorically that it doesn't exist. Maybe it does exist and we just haven't been able to detect it yet. Well, yes, true. But doesn't that raise an obvious question? If no one has ever been able to show that qi exists, and if it's undetectable by any instrument, then how did the ancient Chinese masters detect it? How did they find out about it if it's undetectable? They just sensed it? They just intuited it? Well, maybe they did, but that's not very convincing evidence for its existence, is it? So the conclusion to the first step in our examination of acupuncture is that the theory behind it is not plausible at all. It's not based on anything known to science. It's based on pure magical thinking. So let's move now to the next step. Does it actually work? Okay, so maybe the theory is completely implausible, but it just might work. I mean, a lot of people use acupuncture all over the world. They can't all be deluded, can they? So to answer this question, you need to get into an examination of the scientific and medical literature. You need to see what the studies and the clinical trials of acupuncture have shown. Now, I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm not accustomed to reading medical journals and analyzing medical research papers. So here, I rely on examinations done by science-based medical doctors like Mark Crislip and Stephen Novella and others, who take it upon themselves to regularly examine the latest research on acupuncture each time something new comes out. And guess what, dear listener? Let me cut straight to the chase. Despite everything you've ever read in the newspaper, or heard on the radio, or seen on TV, despite all the anecdotes you've heard throughout your life about the efficacy of acupuncture, it doesn't work. It has no more effect than a placebo, which, given the implausibility of its underlying theory, is really no surprise. But given the widely held view that acupuncture really does work, it may in fact come as a surprise to a lot of people. Now, what Mark Crislip and Stephen Novella and others find when they look at the acupuncture research in detail is that often the claims of the researchers in the conclusions of their papers are just not valid when you look at the methodology they used and the results they got. It should also be noted that most of the researchers who investigate acupuncture are actually pro-acupuncture and tend to spin their findings in favor of a conclusion that supports the continuing use of acupuncture as a therapy. Let me give you a couple of examples. A lot of meta-analyses are done on acupuncture studies. This is where a researcher gathers together a whole lot of studies from a given period of time dealing with one particular medical problem and pools all the data together to try to create a bigger sample size and get a broader picture of what the research is indicating. Often the researchers will conclude from these types of studies that acupuncture is an effective treatment for the problem in question. Let's say, relieving lower back pain. But when you actually go through the paper carefully, you find that the research is mentioned very offhandedly, maybe in a footnote to a graph or something, that some of the acupuncture patients received acupuncture using electrified needles. Well, hang on. This is kind of relevant information. Some of the patients in the studies that contributed to this pool of data had needles stuck into them that were wired up to electricity. And so they were getting an electric charge across their skin between the needles. Well, that's not acupuncture. The application of electrical charges through the skin is actually a known therapy for reducing muscle pain. And what a surprise! It turns out that the studies in which this technique was used were the ones that contributed positive results to the pool of data. Well, how about that? This, of course, contaminates the data and nullifies the findings of the meta-analysis. And if you're able to take out those studies that use electrified needles and then redo the meta-analysis, well, guess what? You find that acupuncture had no more effect than a placebo. But what about the other studies, the ones that used real acupuncture and not electrified needles? Well, they also show that acupuncture has no more effect than a placebo, even though the researchers never actually admit this. The researchers have a big problem in pronouncing that P word, placebo, as Mark Crislip has pointed out humorously many times. Now, I'll come back to that in a second, but one interesting issue regarding acupuncture studies is how to do the placebo. Won't people notice whether you're actually sticking needles into them or not? Well, researchers have come up with some ways to try to overcome this problem. Most of these involve the patient lying face down so they can't tell what the practitioner is doing on their back. Then some get so-called real acupuncture using needles, and some get fake or sham acupuncture. Now, some ways they've developed of doing the sham acupuncture are by twirling a toothpick on top of the skin or using a needle inside a sheath so that the practitioner positions the sheath and presses down on the needle but can't actually tell if the needle is entering the skin or not. Another way of doing sham acupuncture is by using real needles but putting them into the skin at random locations, not into the traditional acupuncture points along the meridians or whatever. So these are all ways that researchers have come up with to try to have a placebo group in their clinical trials. Anyway, it turns out that in all those studies using so-called sham acupuncture as the placebo, the researchers found that there was no difference in effectiveness between the real acupuncture and the sham acupuncture. Now, to any reasonable person, this would be a classic indication that the only effect occurring here is the placebo effect. That is, if the patient believes they're receiving an effective therapy, they will subjectively feel better and will probably report feeling better, even though objectively in the body nothing has changed. So all those studies got a result completely consistent with the placebo effect. However, when those researchers came to write up their conclusions and their abstract, and most importantly, when the institute they work for came to write the press release to accompany the publication of the paper, they all concluded that their study indicated that acupuncture was an effective treatment for the condition in question. Huh? How could that happen? They've just demonstrated that acupuncture doesn't work. That you can just poke someone randomly with a toothpick to get the same effect as acupuncture. So how can they say that they proved that acupuncture works? Well, basically, they say something like this. Our results show not only that acupuncture works, but that even fake acupuncture works. Well, I'll be. Talk about having your cake and eating it too. Acupuncture, as I already said, is based on sticking needles into the skin along certain meridian lines to unblock the chi. The results of these trials showed conclusively that this theory is bunk, that it doesn't matter where you stick the needle or even if you use something that penetrates the skin. So the whole chi theory goes out the window, and everything can be explained by the placebo effect. And yet they conclude that acupuncture works. Well, that's a perfect heads I win, tails you lose situation, which is just not on. And the problem is that they're doing this, and they're writing this in their press releases, and the media are just happily reproducing what they're told. For example, when that toothpick study came out earlier this year, the headline in the Sydney Morning Herald was, "Acupuncture works, even without needles." And that's what we're going to look at a bit more when we come back after this song. How badly the media has performed, including the ABC, when it comes to reporting on recent acupuncture stories. So stay tuned for that after this song, here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. The show is Reality Check, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. And the song you just heard there was Return of the Mac by Mark Morrison from the year 1996. Now, 2 weeks ago in episode 9 of Reality Check, we undertook a critical examination of our national broadcaster here in Australia, the ABC, and how it often falls short when it comes to reporting on issues related to pseudoscience and the paranormal. And I thought that today, as we're talking about acupuncture, we'd come back and take a look at how the ABC has gone in reporting on acupuncture. And I want to talk about one recent incident that I found particularly troubling, because it involved the ABC's most serious and prestigious radio news show, AM. This is ABC Radio's flagship news and current affairs program, broadcast across the entire country 6 mornings a week from 8 to 8:30 a.m. I think it's fair to say that AM is probably the country's most highly regarded and influential radio current affairs show. So that's what makes it particularly frustrating when you hear a really dodgy news report on acupuncture on AM. And the news report I'm talking about was broadcast on the 26th of June this year, and it was about a preliminary study on the use of acupuncture to relieve pain amongst patients in hospital emergency departments. First of all, let's basically look at what the report said, and then we'll see where they get it so wrong. The report is introduced by Tony Eastley, the host of AM, who says this: "A preliminary study has shown that acupuncture can make a real difference to the level of pain being experienced in the often long waits in emergency departments. And as Simon Santo reports, the results have been so encouraging, more work will be done to examine the benefits." The reporter Simon Santo then starts by saying, "Of all the complementary medicines, the traditional Chinese treatment of acupuncture is perhaps the most accepted by doctors. Supporters say that 20% of Australian GPs use needles to relieve the pain experienced by their patients." They then cut to an interview with Mark Cohen from RMIT University in Melbourne, who says, acupuncture is an established part of our health system in terms of primary care in general practice, but it really hasn't entered the emergency departments or the hospital system in a sort of systematic way. A short while later, the reporter mentions Dr. Robin Parker, who works as a physician in the emergency department at the Northern Hospital in Victoria, and describes her in this way. She says 10 years ago she would have been skeptical at the suggestion acupuncture could work better than or in concert with traditional Western medicine. Now Dr. Parker says she's a convert. We then hear Dr. Parker's voice as she talks about how she uses acupuncture in the emergency department of the hospital and how she recommends it to patients and she knows that it works. And then the report ends. Yes, folks, that's it. Basically, a completely free ad for the acupuncture industry on national, publicly funded radio. No questioning, no analysis, no skeptical voices. No one asks about the methodology of the trials being performed. Is there a control group? Were the patients randomized or self-selected? Did they use blinding? What about the sample size? Nothing. Oh well, I guess we'll just have to take Mark Cohen's word for it. After all, he's a professor of complementary medicine and has a history of promoting it, so he wouldn't be biased at all, would he? Frankly, I doubt whether the acupuncture industry lobby group could have written a better report if they tried. It was right on message and pushed all the right buttons. It perpetuated the widely held idea that while some alternative medicines are a bit wacky, acupuncture is the one that's known to work and is used as a legitimate medical therapy. Doctors recognize this, and because it's legit, the use of acupuncture is spreading more and more. Now it's even being used in hospital emergency departments, where it's had amazing success. And then, just to drive the point home, we hear from the woman who was a skeptic, but now she's converted. I mean, you can't argue with evidence like that, can you? Now, how much do you think publicity like that is worth to the acupuncture industry? Especially when it's delivered to the highly educated, high-income listeners of AM. Tens of thousands of dollars? Hundreds of thousands of dollars, perhaps? Well, maybe the ABC could conduct an auction next time between the acupuncturists, the homeopaths, and the chiropractors to see who's willing to pay the most for a fluff piece like that, promoting their therapy on a flagship ABC news program. After hearing this report, I actually made a short complaint to the ABC. And a few weeks later, to my surprise, I received quite a lengthy and detailed response. Now, I won't go into the detail of that response, but basically they concluded that the news report met the impartiality standard required of news and current affairs programs, and also that skeptical voices were not necessary in the report. The main basis for this was that this was a news item and not an in-depth feature. Anyway, I won't go into details about all the other excuses that they gave, and obviously I don't agree that this was acceptable reporting, but the interesting thing about this report is that ABC News basically regarded this news item as a straightforward news report, almost as fluff, something easy. They get the press release from the researchers, they interview those researchers about their findings, and that's the story, in the can. But what I find most interesting is that there was actually a real story here, a major story, right under their noses, and they missed it. Let me explain. This is the real story. Acupuncture researchers in Melbourne perform a dud, useless preliminary study. Patients were not randomized, there was no placebo control, and no blinding. The results of this study were therefore completely worthless. And yet, based on that worthless study, these so-called researchers were given $400,000 by the National Health and Medical Research Council to extend their program to a 3-year clinical trial. That's $400,000 of public money given away on the basis of a dud program. Now there you go, ABC News. There's your story. A real story. Not a piece of promotional fluff for the acupuncture industry. And just to add a bit of context to the story, let's look at the wider question. Why do we need yet another acupuncture study? This is a point that Mark Crislip and Stephen Novella make a lot. Why are we even performing preliminary studies on acupuncture? Preliminary studies are done on drugs or therapies that haven't been tested before to see if they might have potential. Yet acupuncture has been tested to death, and yet they keep wanting to do more tests. Every time another negative or equivocal study comes out, the researchers always conclude by calling for further studies into the effectiveness of acupuncture. Don't they get it? Qi doesn't exist. Acupuncture doesn't work. Get over it. Move on. They're almost like people suffering from obsessive compulsive disorder, who every time they leave the house have to keep going back inside to check if they left the oven on. No, dear, you didn't leave the oven on. The oven was never on in the first place. But they're just like, oh, let me just go back one more time and check if it's on. Let me see. Oh no, okay, it's off. Definitely it's off. Good, okay. All right, good. Okay, now it was off, wasn't it? I did check properly, didn't I? Let me go back one more time and make sure I turned it off. Or at least let me perform a preliminary study to assess the likelihood that the oven is off by just looking in the window. Okay, I'm looking in the window and, oh, I think I can see the oven and, oh, I think it might be on. Oh, I can't see very clearly, but I think it's on. Oh, please give me $400,000 so I can go inside the house again and just check. Please. Oh, thank you. All right, back inside we go. And no, it's off. Yes, definitely off. Okay, well, that's a relief. It's good to know. All right, okay, we can go out now. All right, now. Yeah, it was really off, wasn't it? And so you get the idea. The cycle goes on, and there really is no end in sight. And finally, one last word about acupuncture. All this uncritical media reporting means that a lot of people use acupuncture for all kinds of ailments. Yet, it should be noted that acupuncture is not without risks. Sticking needles into people is not a completely risk-free procedure. Complications from acupuncture are rare, but they can arise. People get ulcers and infections from the needle holes, and this can sometimes even lead to septicemia, that is, a generalized infection of the blood. Nerves and organs can also be damaged if the needle hits the wrong spot, and there's also a risk of contracting blood-borne viruses like hepatitis B. There have even been cases of brain damage and punctured lungs from pushing needles in too far. And for what benefit? Well, nothing. If acupuncture actually worked, maybe some of these risks could be justified. But given that it doesn't work, given that you don't have to put needles into anyone to get a benefit, how can any practitioner justify poking people with needles? It would seem to me to be completely unethical and not something that the media, and particularly the ABC, should be promoting. And finally, as I mentioned, I did rely a lot on the research done by Mark Crislip and Steve Novella in preparing today's show. And if you'd like to listen to their podcasts, and I highly recommend that you do, you can find Quackcast, presented by Mark Crislip, at quackcast.com. And you can hear Stephen Novella, along with the other Skeptical Rogues, every week on The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. And their website is theskepticsguide.org. And I should mention that clinical trials have consistently shown that if you don't listen to Quackcast and The Skeptic's Guide, then your life will never be complete. But hey, it's up to you. Now, before we get into our last song, if you have any questions or comments about what we've covered on the show, or maybe something you'd like us to cover on the show, please do send us an email. The address is realitychecktony, that's T-O-N-Y, at gmail.com. And you can also visit our webpage too, if you like. That's realitycheckonline.net. There you can listen to past episodes of Reality Check. Okay, let's listen to our final song for today, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie reviews.
Joy. Joy. 94.9.
Over 200 volunteers bring you joy every week. Joy. 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, here on Joy 94.9. Also streaming live at joy.org.au and also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. And as I mentioned, you can find previous episodes of Reality Check to listen to on your little pod at our website, realitycheckonline.net. And the song you just heard there was Ashes to Ashes by none other than David Bowie from the year 1980. Okay, it's movie review time here on Reality Check. And our two movies up for review this week are Che and Moon. Let's start with Moon. Moon is the debut feature of 38-year-old director Duncan Jones. Well, who's Duncan Jones, you may ask? Well, I gave you a big clue in the song I just played. Duncan Jones, as a kid, used to be known as Zoe Bowie. Yes, he is indeed the one and only son of British rock star David Bowie. David Bowie's real name is actually David Jones. And Zoe Bowie decided to revert to the name on his birth certificate, Duncan Jones, when he was about 18. So, that's the story of the celebrities and their confusing names, but what about Moon the movie? Well, actually, to tell you the truth, I don't want to say too much about the plot of Moon. If you haven't yet seen the previews or read about the story, don't. Try to go and see this movie knowing almost nothing about what's going to happen. And if you can do that, it will be a much more enjoyable experience. So all I'll tell you is that Moon is set in the not-too-distant future in a base on the Moon. And there's only one man living in that base, Sam Bell, played by American actor Sam Rockwell, who, I have to say, delivers a really impressive performance as pretty much the only actor in this film. Sam is just 2 weeks away from the end of his 3-year contract working on the moon and is counting down the days until he can finally go back to Earth. His job is to maintain 4 giant harvester machines that just roll across the surface of the moon extracting helium-3 from the lunar soil. This helium-3 is then shot back to Earth in canisters where it's used as a main source of energy. Sam's only companion is a kind of robot called Gertie, who speaks to him in a reassuring monotone voiced by Kevin Spacey. Now, I don't want to say a lot about what happens in this movie, but I don't think it's revealing too much to say that things don't go exactly according to plan. Moon is a movie that I can highly recommend. It's a great science fiction film that deals with some of the existential questions dealt with by good science fiction. Who am I? Or what am I? Or what makes me me? It's also one of those movies that has a mystery at its heart that is revealed to you bit by bit as the plot progresses. It reminded me at times of a number of earlier sci-fi films. It's got elements of 2001 A Space Odyssey, particularly in the relationship between Sam and the robot Gertie. It's also got ideas reminiscent of Solaris, Blade Runner, and Total Recall. It's not a classic, I don't think, but if you like those kinds of movies, then I would say you'll probably like Moon. In my opinion, it's probably one of the best films I've seen this year. Now, let's move from the moon back down to Earth and back in time to the 1950s and 60s as we get into our second movie for today, Che. Che is actually two separate movies, each one lasting over 2 hours, and they tell the story of several crucial periods in the life of Argentinian revolutionary Ernesto Che Guevara. Now, I know, over 4 hours on the life of Che Guevara sounds like a bit of a slog, but I enjoyed this movie, and in my opinion, it's definitely one worth checking out. Although I must admit, I didn't watch the two parts in one straight sitting. I watched them on separate days. Che Part 1 covers the period from 1955, when Che first meets Fidel Castro in Mexico City, up to 1959, when he and the other revolutionary fighters win the civil war against Batista and take control of Cuba. We see them traveling by boat from Mexico to Cuba, and then we see a lot of battles going on in the jungle and later in the towns of Cuba. These battle scenes are interspersed with flash forward sequences that show Che visiting New York in 1964, where he makes a speech to the United Nations General Assembly. Che Part 2 covers the later period from 1966 to 67, when he travels in disguise to Bolivia to join and lead an armed revolutionary struggle there. Most of the second film is set in the arid mountain forests of Bolivia, as Che struggles to get the revolution going, while everything that could go wrong does go wrong. Eventually, Che and a band of loyal revolutionaries find themselves in the forest, abandoned by pretty much all their potential allies, with the US-backed Bolivian armed forces closing in. If you don't know the story of Che Guevara's life, I won't tell you the ending, but let me just say, prepare yourself for the worst. You might even shed a tear or two at the end. Che is directed by the extremely prolific Hollywood director Steven Soderbergh, and I reckon he does a great job. Soderbergh was also the cinematographer on this movie under the alias Peter Andrews, and I was really impressed with his use of the camera. The film looks great. The handheld camera works really effectively to create just the right mood when it's needed. The scenes in the lush green jungles of Cuba are full of vibrant color, and the black and white footage when Che is in New York creates an appropriately historic mood. I'm not a huge fan of Steven Soderbergh, but in this film, I think he pretty much hits all the right notes. I never found any of the scenes cliched, nor did I find that he was talking down to the audience or being overly sentimental. The tone was always pretty spot on. Perhaps my only criticism of the movie is that, as it has a cast of hundreds, literally, often I had trouble working out who was who and what was happening to whom and where, especially as many of the characters get killed soon after being introduced. My final comment on Che the movie is that it certainly portrays Che in a very favourable light as a revolutionary genuinely committed to improving the lot of the suffering masses, almost a kind of superhero. Now, I have no idea how close to the truth that is, but at least it makes for a very appealing protagonist in the movie. It's also interesting to see the genuine idealism that revolutions, like the Cuban Revolution, always seem to begin with. Given the crushing poverty, the gross inequalities of wealth, and the immense social injustice they see around them, you can absolutely understand their desire to fight for change and make things better. Now, I don't want to get into a debate as to whether armed struggle is the best way to achieve that change, but it's nice to be reminded that these revolutionaries had all the right motives and their hearts were in the right places, at least when the revolution was beginning. And it's sad and touching to see the misguided naivety with which Che goes to Bolivia, thinking he can basically do a rerun of the Cuban Revolution there. And most interestingly, it's the people he's trying most to help, the desperately poor Bolivian peasants, who don't understand what he's fighting for, who don't trust him, abandon him, and in the end betray him. So I'm sure there's a lesson in there for us all. So two films this week that I can highly recommend, Che and Moon. But having recommended them, I'd suggest that if you want to see them, do it soon. For some reason, Moon is only showing at 4 cinemas in the whole of the Melbourne metropolitan area, and Che is only showing at 1. And I spoke to the distributors directly yesterday, and they told me that they have no plans to go for a wider release. I don't know what goes into making these distribution decisions, and I don't know what movies everyone's going to see. Maybe it's the one about the flying guinea pigs. I see that it's on at 19 cinemas in Melbourne. Some things just defy all comprehension. And that brings us to the end of the 11th episode of Reality Check on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 1 o'clock next Tuesday for episode 12. Have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.